it's a new episode.
Dun, dun. I loved it. Perfect. Episode 86.5. We've got the Super Bowl runner-up Philadelphia Eagles and a team that got the shit kicked out of them in the playoffs, the Seattle Seahawks, to talk about. Shane, what do you think? Do we go Eagles first? Do we give them the privilege, or do we go Seahawks first?
I headlined last week, so I'll let you headline this week. This one will be chunky. I really tried really, really hard to not make it fucking 40 minutes again like I did last week, but it happened again. But this is more optimism. But I'm also going to be less theoretical and more practical on this one, as opposed to like, hey, here's 25 minutes about rookie running back quarterbacks. So okay. I will only talk about running quarterbacks this time. So as you guys know, I'm doing the Eagles. And last week I alluded to the ascension of the Eagles offense, as it was really wild to watch. And they had one of the easiest schedules compared to all teams. I think they had actually the easiest. But the acquisition of A.J. Brown, the growth of Devonta Smith, and the ascension to MVP caliber play from Jalen Hurts, he was robbed. I'm putting that in writing today, or audio writing, whatever that's called. They brought the Eagles to one of the most viable fantasy teams last year, as they had two wide receivers in the top 10, a top 12 tight end, a top 15 running back, and the number one overall quarterback. So if you want to hear my whole spiel about mobile quarterbacks, listen to 85.5, but the too long didn't read of mobile quarterbacks is one position is really good, fade the rest, just kind of get lucky. So we saw with Jalen Hurts last year, wide receiver was great, tight end was pretty good. I mean, if Goddard didn't get hurt, there's a chance that he finishes a lot higher.
Yep.
And running back was kind of whatever. I'll deal with that later of the number compared to actual what they should have done. And what I want to do first is go over why the team was so successful and what will lead you to them scoring a lot of fantasy points for you this year. So it's easy to sit here and go, this player's good, this player's bad. But for myself, because I have an obsessive personality of going so far deep in the rabbit hole, I want to find trends so I can get better at projecting things. And hopefully everybody who is engaging with this is benefiting as well. So my sources on this are Alex Rollins and an article from Casey Sully, as we talked about last week, Shane Steichen's scheme of abusing the RPO in a zone running scheme basically forced the defense to switch man coverage as the season went along to cover Hurts, to put a man down to make sure that he wasn't running on his over 100 designed run plays for the year. And they forced the secondary to cover man for A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith in air raid style passing attack, which people just can't do. And that's why they are successful on a surface level. So the real juice is the ascension of Jalen Hurts' processing ability to read defenses and audible within the formation, which led to extreme efficiency and exploitation of the defenses. So the main form of the option the Eagles ran was the zone read, where Hurts would watch the linebackers were doing. If a player was coming down to attack the running back, he'd take off. If the player stays, Hurts handed off. Pretty simple. Then you just make variations of that within the scheme. As layers are added, that the RB will motion to different areas to basically be a blocker, kick out as a runner to further confuse the defense. So you create this, basically we're running the same structure, but there's going to be 90 different variations of the way it's going to happen. So if you have your flavors mustard, you don't know what it's going to be.
What kind of mustard is this?
Yeah, the best kind. So some defenses actually just said, fuck it, and we're just always going to chase the running back no matter what, which is what led to Hurts' certain games where he'd have over 100 yards. And this flux of play allowed Miles Sanders use his vision to follow the number one ranked O-line in PFF. And from the scheme, it allowed a variety of runs to occur. So he would cut in, cut out, run, bounce it out wide. So there was a lot of variety that was confusing the defense. So ironically, even though the passing scheme didn't get better until their bye week, initially the Eagles were using A.J. Brown as they were in Tennessee, kind of on drag routes. So he'd run like across wide, just kind of be a yak guy. And then while Smith was the deep threat, so teams were just basically stacking the middle and being like, all right, we'll just cover a safety with Devonta and give him DB help. But after the team watched the tape at their bye week, they kind of realized that AJB had an unrealized talent of the deep ball, because he was able to beat guys off the line with his because initially, like, people were saying that AJB's skill set wasn't based on man coverage or breaking the jam at the line, but he showed that he increased his footwork and as well as his speed. So there was points in the year where they were just forcing the ball downfield to AJ Brown. They were just basically being like, "Hey, we know he's going to be there. He's either going to outrun him or he's going to outmaneuver them." And which basically led to AJ Brown becoming the yak god as well, because as soon as they learned that he can do the long game, that and teams were starting to cover him deep, they realized, oh, he can also play the intermittent, and they were just running curl routes and just giving him opportunities of 8 yard passages, 8 yard passes with like 15 yards of yak opportunity.
Can I hop in real quick and absolutely. Quote? I need to quote myself from my team write up on the Eagles in May 2022. Quote, an increased emphasis on the run, both from Hurts and the others in the second half of 2021, put them in a better position to use play action and the middle of the field. Guess which receiver dominates off play action in the middle of the field? AJ Brown. I think Sirianni leans into what made his team a success in the second half of the year and builds that around Hurts' strength. End quote. Suck it.
I remember when you guys were doing the overs on those and your over was like 900 for AJ Brown. Everyone's like, ah, we don't know. And here
too
we are.
Easy.
I'll go into the stats later of AJ Brown if he could have been a 2,000 yard receiver last year.
Oh my God.
So we all know Steichen is the new head coach of the Colts, like I talked about last week. So you may have some hesitation of, oh shit, the offense is leaving. They got a new scheme coming in, but Philly just knows what they're doing. They promoted from within, so their new offensive coordinator, Brian Johnson, used to be the quarterback's coach, and the new quarterback's coach was the former assistant quarterback's coach, Alex Tanney. So I'm basically just expecting the same output and the same type of offense as last year, but with a much more refined game of them understanding how to exploit the wide receivers and the offensive game. And fortunately for me and fantasy players, a tougher schedule means that they're going to be having tougher opponents and they're going to have to score more points.
Oh yeah.
And towards after their bye week, Philly was able to put up 30 point games consistently and blow. So I think the availability of those games being more prominent is going to lead to a higher fantasy ceiling for this team.
Sure.
Yeah, dude, Jalen Hurts was like 23rd in team pass attempts per game. They ran at like the fourth highest rate in the league. If they pass more, tell me more about this, Shane. Keep going.
Okay, so now onto the draft. They drafted defense. That's it. Yep. Plain and simple. Oh yeah, shout out Tanner McGee, because apparently my brother-in-law's friend with them from seminary. So maybe we'll get tickets one day. So that'd be fucking sweet.
Fuck.
I know we shit talked to you a lot, bro, but. Give me a jersey, homie.
AJ Brown's there. That's it. I don't care.
That's all I care about. All right. So I'm gonna break down position as now, because there's really not anybody to talk about in the draft because there's nothing applicable. Sure. Number one overall is who I want to talk about most, who I've been kissing on the lips in fantasy for the last year and a half, basically. The man who said, God bless everyone who hating on me, Jalen Hurts. So I gushed over Hurts last week, and I'm coming at you again more this year. So like Tony said, his efficiency was really good. Hurts ranked 10th in passing yards and 13th in air yards per player profiler, which goes against the data I gave you last week saying that mobile quarterbacks don't throw the ball a lot.
Well, he's the unicorn, right?
Correct. He is, to me, the unicorn in the league. Like, it's wild to see. Like, granted, he doesn't have a 70-yard bomb of a deep ball, but whatever. Who gives a shit? So Hurts increases accuracy and his efficiency, where he was number 22 in danger plays and 24 overall in number of interceptable passes. So lower number is better, right? You want a guy who plays safer, but also has the ability to be very accurate with his throws. He was number 4 in passer rating and in QBR, 5th overall in deep ball accuracy, 3rd in the clean pocket accuracy, number 2 in deep ball catchable pass, and 9th in catchable pass rate. So he's just setting up his guys for success. So in man versus zone coverage, Hurts was not ranked below 9 in all passer rating and completion percentages. So top 10 across the board. And I think even Mahomes was lower in some of those. I think he was like 15th in some. So, I mean, this belief that Mahomes is the end-all, be-all touchdown or quarterback one in fantasy, I think is, at least to me, is starting to crumble. So unfortunately, the downside of Hurts' passing game last year is he was ranked 21 in red zone accuracy and red zone completion rate, but I don't give a shit about that at all because he's a rushing quarterback. And when you rank number one in carries in red zone touches and rushing touchdowns, as the quarterback, that's all I need you to do. Score me the 6 points, 4 or 5 yards on top of that. Right. So I'm not going to add any fluff to this or caveats. For me, Jalen Hurts is the number one quarterback in fantasy football. 4-for-4 has him there, and I'm all for it because I do believe he's the true unicorn. He has an ADP of around 20 and 24.6 per underdog, which is about mid-second round. So in one quarterback leagues, PPR 4-point touchdown. Who do you guys want? Higgins, Hurts, or Tony Pollard?
Hurts.
Yeah, Hurts.
I'm glad my propagandist permeating to everybody believes.
Real quick, like the thing you said earlier, you were like 100 of his runs were designed, right?
Yeah.
And so Hurts had 165 runs, so that's way ahead of everybody else. Actually, second place was Justin Fields with 160, but then third was Josh Allen with 124 and Daniel Jones 120. But the thing that backs this up, why I'm supporting your propaganda, is because he had 60% of his carries were designed runs. Allen was 39% designed runs. Fields was 46% designed runs, and Daniel Jones was 44% designed runs. I feel like Hurts is still going to get 10 carries a game just because that is a play that is called. Doesn't rely on pressure breaking down plus, you know, a couple of schemed runs. Like, no, him running is the thing.
Big old thumbs up for me. Like, I was letting the moment set in of, hey, this part's important. So I'm going with our matching shirts. This is an odd story format, but Tony and I are both wearing our AJ Brown shirts because we represent. It's tough to pick one to begin with, but we got to go with our guy. So last year, AJ Brown was top 10 in targets, target share, and target rate in the NFL, fourth in receiving yards with 1,496, and number two in yards after catch with 543 yards, 3 yards per route run, 102 yards per target, 10.2 yards per target, 17 yards per reception. And the crazy thing about that number is AJ Brown had 819 unrealized air yards.
Missed it. So for those listening, unrealized air yards are passes that were overthrown or missed or intercepted that were thrown his way.
So like 4 Sky Moore's worth of, of passes did not hit AJ Brown. So there's a world where AJ Brown cracks 2,000 yards in a season. I mean, that's obviously variable with how Goddard was missing for 4 or 5 games or 6 games, whatever he missed. So those numbers are going to be a little bit repressed, but I think the passing volume as they get better is actually going to be increased as the season goes on by a percentage. And also the understanding of how AJ Brown can function as a complete true alpha wide receiver in all positions of the field, that I really believe AJ Brown can crack 1,800 yards this season.
Let's go.
And be the wide receiver one. So don't be surprised if you don't see AJ Brown, or don't be surprised if you do see AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts as the one and one in their position. Damn. This year.
I need to take a moment to collect myself.
Yeah. All right.
I have one thing. I have one AJ Brown nugget I want to throw out there. Last year, I lost my shit on the podcast when I saw that Jamar Chase had 8 touchdowns on 40 deep, like 20 or more yards downfield targets, just targets, not completions, 8 touchdowns. Well, last year, AJ Brown had 29 deep targets and scored 7 touchdowns.
Oh, nice.
So of every 4 times that they threw the ball to AJ Brown 20 yards or more downfield, it was a touchdown.
Dude, I've been trying to buy AJ Brown in Dynasty everywhere. No one's having it. I'm like, God damn it, you guys, I'm giving you deals, but I'm trying to get ahead of the curve. So yep. I know we talked our shit about Kelsey. Pick one in PPR, Travis Kelsey, Bijan, or AJ Brown.
Travis Kelsey.
Ooh. I don't know, man. Not if all this AJ Brown knowledge been spit at me.
So this is my thought was AJ Brown isn't, your league mates aren't as sick as Tony or some other people we talk about, where this is like, you're like 107 here.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what, Shane? I'm with you. I'm believing you. I'm going AJ Brown.
We're going gut. That's what we need, everybody. Shit. Fuck the data. Trust the gut. Right.
I'm going with it.
I am all of a sudden, Shane, I'm terrified. In Ryan has a higher pick than me in our big money league in the first round, and he could keep Trevor Lawrence for an 11th. And I just assumed that he would keep Travis Kelce for a first, but he's got AJ Brown as a third round pick. He could just keep AJ Brown and get Travis Kelce in the first round again, anyways.
Right.
Get paid, Ryan.
That's smashing. Oh my God. Fuck.
That's how we do this exercise, right? Figure out the holes you can exploit in fantasy. Let us do the hard work for you and be
I gotta write this down.
I know this is an audio format, but Ryan is literally writing this down. So,
all right. Anyways. So while you write down your AJ Brown propaganda, it's really hard to follow in the footsteps of Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown at the same time. But I think Devonta Smith is able to fill those shoes really easily because, said, all Batman, no Robins. So last year, the Slim Reaper was number 13 in targets. He had 1,196 air yards, 95 receptions, and 7 touchdowns. People were always concerned about Smith, but being number 7 in the league of yards after catch with 485 yards, I'm not concerned about his size anymore. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
Nope.
In 2 years in the league, he's proved he's a real deal. Smith also had 634 unrealized air yards, so there was 1,400 yards that were unrealized in the Philly offense. So if you tack that on to Jalen Hurts, it's like if he can be cracking 5,000 yards potentially, we don't know what's going to happen, but the data, it could happen.
Yeah, it's crazy that Hurts can support both those wide receivers. I mean, Smith was really good too.
I mean, that was my whole point last week of like running quarterbacks don't. The probability is super low to do one. And if you can do both, it's like almost statistically impossible.
Right.
So there is another increase of air yards this year, like I said, based upon what we saw of increase in scheme and understanding how to use the wide receivers. So when you look at the ranking, Smith is the player profile where he averaged a lot of about average on 20 of all statistics. As he's lower in some areas like contested catch rate, but that's not really his skill set, right? He's not a dude who's going to go high ball and just go down like Mike Williams, but he's a very good yak guy because he had the third highest juke rate at the position.
Hell yeah.
And the stats aren't like super impressive when you look at him just isolated, but when you put him in comparison that there's a true alpha wide receiver that he is running with on the same team as him, I'm not honestly upset if Devonta Smith, based upon my team build, is my wide receiver one on my team, right? So if you go like Travis Kelce in the first, Jalen Hurts, and then you somehow luck into Smith in the third, like you're cruising smooth. So currently at 4 for 4, Smith is wide receiver 12, right behind Olave and ahead of Jalen Waddle with an ADP of around 22, so late second round. So, I mean, there is some variation if the guys can slip or whatever. But for me personally, it does seem a little higher because you're kind of drafting him at a ceiling where you're not getting a really big return rate to me, where say you're drafting AJ Brown as like potentially wide receiver 5 and he returns wide receiver 1. That's a much bigger gap in my mind as opposed to drafting a guy at wide receiver 12 and him finishing at wide receiver 10. I don't, there's not that big of a difference to me in regards to that because the only thing that's separating 10 and 12 is like 15 points.
Sure.
So in PPR pick one, I have two, but this is the first one. So it'd be Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Chris Olave.
Ooh.
Go ahead.
In redraft, right?
Correct.
I'm going Smith and Olave.
I'm going Olave, Smith, Waddle.
Yeah, that's where I have it as well.
And I have a question for you guys then. Devonta Smith or T. Higgins?
Smith.
Give me Smitty, dude. Like,
okay.
Even though that's a higher passing volume offense, I don't want to say Higgins is a jag because that's not correct, but like just the way that team's structured, and he's always hurt somehow where he's very boom bust, where Smitty to me is more of a floor guy with the probability of wide receiver ceiling.
Sure.
Okay, next one. Devonta Smith, Patrick Mahomes, or Nick Chubb?
Smith, Mahomes, or Nick Chubb?
I mean, obviously, you know, in a vacuum, it obviously depends on who I take in the first round, but...
Correct.
4-point passing touchdowns, you said?
Yes.
Probably Nick Chubb.
Yeah, I'd have to agree too. Chubb's going to be like the main part of that offense, especially now that Hunt's gone.
Yep.
6-point passing touchdowns, Mahomes. Not even a question.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I don't think he makes it to like 2 of 3.
Sure.
All right. We're going with our guy here, Ryan, and his favorite position, the tight end. So in episode 77, I gushed about Dallas Goedert being a buy in dynasty. So my main sticking point was that 10 points separated tight end 12 and tight end 6 on the year in the finish. So that's one catch for 10 yards in PPR. Literally one play. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So the position is clearly fluky outside of the big dog, Travis Kelce, which Ryan just talked about. And seeing as how Dallas Goedert missed 5 games in fantasy, we can assume he'd finish above that marker and potentially finish in the top 3 position behind Kelce and Hockenson based upon the air yards of that team, unrealized air yards, and the target share. Because unfortunately, with Goddard in the game, the points per game for Smith and AJ Brown were repressed. So it just kind of happens because there's a better player on the field.
I'm sorry, I did notice that when you look at player splits, that Devonta is the one that gets the increase in targets when Goddard misses games, because he misses games every year.
Yeah, I didn't know how old he was. He's like 29.
He's been around. I mean, he was Zach Ertz. It was Zach Ertz and him, you know?
So the way I want to view the value of tight end going for this year is obviously the amount of targets they're going to share and the quality of targets they're going to share with, because they're going to optimize the efficiency of the position. So last year, Goddard did not finish below top 4 at the position in yards per route run, yards per target, yards per reception, yards per team pass attempt, and yards after the catch. So he's an incredibly efficient tight end in the league. And he does run out of the slot a lot, which is great because, as I mentioned last week, that we want tight ends to not block when it comes to mobile quarterbacks because they don't really need to. So there's more availability of Goddard running more routes. So all these efficiency markers signal to me that even though there is competition between AJ Brown and Goddard, and even with a 5.7 average target per game, Goddard has shown that he can optimize these targets to make the most out of these targets for our fantasy purposes. So he might not have a 100 target yard season like other tight ends like Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, Kyle Pitts potentially, but he is one of the most efficient in the league, and that's something I really want to bet on in fantasy. So as of right now, Goddard ranked 13th out of 98 in all starting tight ends for routes ran. So that's something blocked. He blocked 13th. He was ranked.
Okay, sure.
Sorry, I'm confusing that. Yeah, so he ran, compared to other players, he blocked a really low number.
Right.
So Goddard saw the highest percentage of snaps last year for his career at 30.8% for the slot position. So they're clearly transitioning Goddard to be the possession and yak guy on the team in the short range with PPR, which is like honestly gold, which is what I want. Like same thing with Kelce that we talk about. Hit him in the intermediate, let him rack up 9 yards. So as of right now, Goddard is ranked at tight end 6 behind Kittle and Pitts, ahead of Waller and Ingram. And Goddard can be picked up for around the early 6th. So as of right now, Dallas Goedert, Madison, who I assume people are going to be weird about, and he's going to climb up to like round 5 or 4 potentially.
Yes. Yes.
So Goddard, Madison, or Treylon Burks?
Burks.
Ooh. I'll go with Goddard.
I feel like Goddard's the very last person before you have to reach your hand into the blob and pick out whatever tight end you feel like mulling around blindfolded.
I agree with that. I would just rather have Burks at that point and then maybe try to hit Freiermuth up in the next 2 rounds.
Oh, yeah, 100%. That's kind of where I was leaning to, just because the ceiling's a lot different.
You know who's going to become the number 2 tight end this year? Who's going to go over Jack Stoll and Dan Arnold on the Philadelphia Eagles? Mr. Grant Calcaterra. I'm putting his touchdowns at 2.5, and I'm going to take the over. I think he gets 3 or 4 this year.
I think they have Dan Arnold too.
He showed some flashes last year, and Calcaterra's big man.
I mean, like Tony said too, if they have Goddard misses time like he always does, good weekly fill-in and all those 1,800 yards have to go somewhere.
Yeah. All right.
So here comes the hard part, and who I'm projecting to fade as an entire group, unless they're depth pieces at a really, really good price for me, is the running back room of the Eagles.
All of them.
So in 2022, the Eagles had Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Kenny Gainwell, and San Francisco castoff Trey Sermon. This year, they'll have Rashad Penny, Boston Scott, Kenny Gainwell, Trey Sermon, and DeAndre Swift. Granted, one of those guys will be on the chopping block just because of roster space. And it's probably Sermon, in my opinion, because he's not a vet. He hasn't really done shit in the last 2 years of his league. He has 43 attempts in 2 years, even on a really heavy run offense. That's really, really bad.
With good draft cap, too.
Yeah, with really good draft capital. So I'm going to break down Miles Sanders and kind of his position in the team and how we can kind of laterally assume that someone else will fill that role. So last year, Miles Sanders had a career with 259 attempts on 1,269 yards, which can be attributed to the number one ranked offensive line and the abuse of the zone RPO run scheme and the fat rip of coke the Eagles took for their offense last year. So Sanders finished overall fifth in yards, fourth in red zone touchdowns, ninth overall in total touchdowns, eighth in total carries, but he only finished as RB15 in PPR. So while he did overperform his ADP, there's a picture here that I think is missing a component, and I'm sure you guys can see it because it's pretty obvious to us, passing work. So as I rambled last week, mobile quarterbacks don't utilize the passing game for the running back because clearly they don't need to. So all running backs, every guy they had in the backfield last year had a total of combined, had 55 targets for five dudes or four dudes, whatever they had. So RB9 last year, Aaron Jones had 59 catches, seven touchdowns, 1,100 yards. So it goes to show you how vital pass catching is in regards to running backs, right? That's why CMC is so dominant. So granted, Sanders' main skill probably isn't pass catching, so I don't really view it's fair to say that it's all based on him, but it's also could be scheme. But there's not really a way that there's four total running backs in your team that are not good at catching passes, right? So Philly's doing a little something differently this year with the acquisition of DeAndre Swift because it basically got him for free. And I don't really expect them to change anything in regards to the way the team is structured on their offensive scheme. So Swift has shown, obviously, that his biggest asset is breakaway speed and pass catching ability. And I really don't see how a mobile quarterback that only had 56 total targets, the running back last year, can target Swift 50 times this year to make him fantasy viable. So sure. I personally feel, especially for a running back who's never ran for more than 620 rushing yards in an entire season. So I think the running back room is a real trap. And I think everybody who was beaten on the drums of saying Bijan and Gibbs to Philly was fantasy gold didn't really know what they were talking about. Like, granted, obviously Bijan is different in a way because he's more of a bell cow back, but I don't think that if people who were picking him to be Jesus Christ reborn on the field and Nick Sirianni makes him finish RB15 in PPR, I think they're going to try to bomb that facility. that's just the way fantasy people are, right?
Right.
So right now, 4-for-4, Swift is RB25 behind Pacheco, Connor, and ahead of Cook and Monty in the mid-sixths. So James Connor, DeAndre Swift, or David Montgomery?
Monty.
Yeah, I think Montgomery, yeah.
I am going to reach on David Montgomery this year because I don't think people are recognizing that David Montgomery is going to play first and second downs for the Detroit Lions this year.
I don't even think half the people listening realize that Montgomery's on the Lions.
It's true.
Honestly, David Montgomery has a chance at where he's priced to be a huge fucking deal. And everyone's obsessed with the shiny new toy. And David Montgomery's just going to ho-hum, you know, boringly put up 1,200 yards and like seven touchdowns.
Yeah, he's just Jamal Williams, but better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't need Gibbs to touch the ball 200 times. Give him 50 passes. They can both exist in the same offense and still be
right.
Viable fantasy assets.
Yep. All
right, so the next guy is Rashad Penny, who is a value to me in the context of it's round 10. I need a weekly filler, and I'm full well aware that this dude's going to blow up and implode after 4 weeks, and I can release him to pick up Devon Achane in week 6 for $12 in FAB. So Penny will win you weeks. It's proven, and I don't doubt that, but those games are going to be incredibly hard to predict. And with his injury history of only playing 28 total games in the last 4 years, the dude just can't stay healthy. So it's not something I'm willing to really stake my claim on, but at RB38 in the middle of the ninth to late 10th round, if he can put up Niall Sanders numbers and stay healthy for 10 games, he's going to be a league winner no matter what. It's a perfectly fine lottery ticket to me if you know what you're getting into. There's kind of a little bit of ugly running back room just based on notoriety here. So they're ranked from 34 to 39 in running backs is Charbs, Harris, not Najee, Javonte, Kamara, Penny, and Gibson. So any of those, honestly, to me, are league winners just based on if they can hit the ceiling that we think they can hit. But I really think that every one of those players kind of has red flags outside of Charbs to me, just because we're also biased on Charbonnet.
Oh, right. We're about to. We haven't even done it yet.
All right, guys. So this year in redraft, Javonte, Penny, or Gibson?
It's Gibson, Javonte, Penny in that order.
Probably. I'm too unsure about how Javonte is going to do this year with Garoppolo.
No, Javonte in Denver. You said Davante. Oh,
Williams. Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah, we know River Ron doesn't know how to use Antonio Gibson, so
he does.
Big old fade on me on that one. So I really don't think our viewers are in deep enough leagues where Kenny G is going to be an optional guy to draft, because you can just probably pick him up in like the 16th or 18th round or get him for fab on free. But he's a good deep sleeper if these two dudes can't stay healthy, and he might have some juice there, right? He's been in the system for 2 years. He knows the scheme. They can trust him. So we'll see what happens. All right, so I'm going to give a quick summary because I rambled a little bit. So last week I talked about picking the single position for more mobile quarterbacks outside of the quarterbacks themselves. So I'm planting my flag as in the position that Philly outside of Jalen Hurts is the wide receiver room with a strong belief in Dallas Goedert. So AJ Brown has the highest ceiling with the availability to have the best return on investment at draft position in my eyes. Devonta Smith is being drafted at his ceiling, so he's more or less a wash at ADP for me. And based on team structure, I wouldn't be upset with him as wide receiver one if I'm going more RB heavy or start tight end quarterback. And speaking of tight end, I feel like Dallas Goedert is being drafted fairly, and I believe he can return potentially more for his ADP, but I've also don't mind if I go a little bit early on my end just to avoid the blob of tight end, because I'm starting to lean of I want big boys and no one else at tight end, or I'm just punting the position entirely. I'll take Chig, whatever.
Sure. Yep.
I'm out on all RBs in Philly this year at ADP. If Penny stays healthy, he's going to win you leagues, full stop, and you look like a genius. So you're welcome. So swing for the fences if you want, but have a backup ready. Fly, Eagles, fly.
All right.
Hell yeah.
Where do the Eagles end this season, Shane? Do they play in the Super Bowl?
I think so. I mean, that defense is a fucking monster now, right? Like,
yep. The Georgia defense?
Yeah.
Especially after their draft, yeah.
If they can understand we can do different plays, then yeah. Right? they don't choke that team. Or they don't choke that run. And I don't know, NFC's like up in the air, right?
Their defensive coordinator in Philly is Sean Desai, who was the Bears linebacker coach for that 2018 team. He's a Vic Fangio guy. So that's a good sign.
Does Philly upset Jerry Jones twice?
Yes.
I don't even think that's an upset. I think that's just we're coming to take the star.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Celebrate right on that star. All right, so let's talk Seahawks, boys. Let's talk Seahawks. Let's start with the quarterbacks. Geno Smith and Drew Lock.
Okay.
So Seattle has historically been sold to us as a team that runs to set up the pass, but they passed on almost 60% of their offensive snaps last year. Pretty nice.
Yeah, Geno was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he was given the Tank Commander label last year, but he had the highest completion percentage last year of all quarterbacks that played more than 7 games, 69.8%.
Damn, that's a fact?
It's science, really? Bro.
Damn, science.
He passed for almost 4,300 yards. He had through 30 touchdowns. So, what the fuck? Where did that come from?
Yeah, well, right? Greg's the richest story for sure.
So here's the deal. They had a good running game. They had a better collection of skill position players than Russ ever had in Seattle, right? And they drafted and hit on the starting left and right tackle last year. I mean, they nailed it. Yeah, Geno was strong off play action. He was efficient in the short and in the deep. His average depth of target, 9th in the league last year. So he wasn't Alex Smithing it. He was going for it. He had the league's best completion percentage in passes that traveled more than 20 yards from the line. So he was an effective deep ball thrower last year. When he's kept clean, he's an assassin. But here's the thing. He's going to take a step back this year. All right. He threw 11 picks last year, but he was charted with 41 interceptable passes.
Oh my God.
Damn.
And so 30 interceptable passes were not intercepted, and that will swing back towards, you know, the mean. But I think you could probably expect those 11 to go up to 15 to 18 if he continues to make those mistakes.
Is it because he only played one good team 8 times last year?
Also possible. With this collection of skill position players, I don't think he's a top 5 quarterback, but I think 4-for-4's got him at quarterback 10, and I think that's right on the money. In a pure redraft sense, I love Geno Smith this year because here's the deal, man. 2 against Arizona, 2 against the Rams. He's got the Lions, Ravens, and Commanders on the schedule.
Nice.
If you're going Geno Smith, though, you might want to load up with Anthony Richardson because his playoff schedule is Philly, Tennessee, and Pittsburgh.
Ugh. Wow.
Yep.
GG.
Yep. See ya. So there still, though, during the season, there's going to be a ton of production because of how they've hit on the line. They've added in the draft. The issue is how often this offense passes. So if they try to play ball control, it will hurt Smith's productivity. The Seahawks were 14th in neutral game script pace last year. So if that slows down, he's just not going to have as many attempts. If you choose to not go after the first tier of quarterbacks this upcoming season, Geno Smith should be the guy you're getting in the 8th.
Okay.
7th.
Makes sense.
He was QB5 last year, but here's the deal. That same exact total points would have made him QB12 in 2020 and QB12 in 2021.
God damn.
Wow. So it's not like he had this star of a season. It's that the pack regressed. Lamar was hurt. Herbert was hurt. Like all these different things, right?
Yeah.
So the bar lowered. So he'll put up points, but the discount at this point is just gone. I think he gives you flexibility to go wide receiver or running back when people are fighting over Burrow, Herbert, and Lamar in the 3rd to 4th to 5th rounds. Okay. So like I said earlier, Geno Smith is quarterback 10 on 4-for-4. Would you take Geno Smith or Daniel Jones?
Ooh, I like Danny Dimes this year. I'm going
Danny. I think the rushing upside is the only reason why. Like his offense is ass compared to Geno.
Geno Smith or Dak Prescott?
Ooh. I think I'm going Geno.
Me too.
Yeah, I think I'm going Geno as well.
Last but not least, Geno Smith or Kirk Cousins?
No way. Get out of here. Get out of here. Go on, Geno.
Dude, give me that kirked up white boy, Kirk Cousins.
All right. So let's talk running backs. Kenneth Walker, runner-up 2022 Rookie of the Year voting behind Garrett Wilson, put up 1,050 rushing yards and 10 touchdowns on 228 carries in 15 games. So, obviously, I'm not breaking any news here to tell you that the Seahawks took Zach Charbonnet in round 2 this year, so it left people scratching their heads. So I decided to dig in and get really fucking weird here. I broke down all by game, all of his rushing totals, and then divided them by his longest carry in that game. And then I averaged all that shit out. So In any given game, 47% of Kenneth Walker's rushing production came on one play.
God damn.
Really?
Yes. So, you know, he's a home run hitter, right? He'll bust a 70-yard run. I mean, I'm sorry, Shane. That run against the Chargers last year is fucking sick.
No, like, our run defense was ass. Everybody should you should be the highlight reel against us. If you're not doing that, you're doing it wrong.
Correct. So, however, I mean, that also means that you're incredibly inefficient on your other carries. If 47% of your rushing totals in a given game is on one play and you had 228 carries for 1,000 yards, that's a lot of really, really short runs.
Especially the good offensive line, too.
Well, so they don't really know who's playing center right now. All right. It's a three-headed race on the interior between Evan Brown, who they signed. They drafted Olu Olawatami, who is a prospect that everyone liked, and Joey Hunt. So they're all competing to be the center, and they're hoping that guard Phil Haynes returns to like his 2021 form after a bad 2022. I believe with a more efficient blocking attack, there's a chance both Walker and Charbonnet are viable weekly fantasy starters. Now, Walker had a 60% snap share last year, which means opportunities there even if both of them are healthy. He was third in the league in red zone touches, but still ranked 40th on Player Profile's fantasy points per opportunity, which averages out fantasy points between touch and target.
That's atrocious.
He had 54 of his runs stuffed at or behind the line, which was fourth most in the league.
So I didn't watch a lot of Seahawks games. It just like never came on red zone. Is it bad vision? Is that what it is?
I think that he is a guy that runs downhill, but takes a little bit more time to get downhill than...
Okay.
Because you see him break out these runs and he's got the second gear, but the first gear takes a little bit longer to process through. Obviously, I say that as a man who is sweating just from sitting upstairs by a bright light. So, like, grain of salt here. He doesn't catch passes. That's the thing. You need to do that, right? Like, you get fantasy points for that. So, not great, Bob. He is RB21 on 4-for-4 due to that lack of pass catching profile. And I honestly think that's probably about where he should be. He doesn't catch. He's big play dependent. I mean, he's still a big play waiting to happen, but he's not going to get you 6 yards of carry.
So do you think that that ranking is from if Charbonnet wasn't drafted there, where do you think he is?
15.
Yeah. 14-ish. Yeah. That's what I was thinking too.
So, gentlemen, Kenneth Walker, I'll give you an easy one first. Kenneth Walker or James Conner?
Ooh.
Oh, I got you on that one. Okay.
I'd probably still go Walker.
Yeah, I think Seattle's just going to score more touchdowns.
Yeah.
Okay, Kenneth Walker or Travis Etienne?
Ugh. Ooh. You know I love my Jags.
Okay.
And ETN is a Jag, so.
Shane, what do you think?
Yeah, dude, I sold my share of ETN. That offense is just going to be three-headed dragon. They don't pass it to him, even though that's his best skill set. He said he wants a lower work rate. They don't run him as much as they should. So I think even though KW is a boom-bust guy, give me the ceiling.
Okay. Kenny Walker or Najee Harris?
I like Najee.
That one's a lot easier for me.
Yeah, I'm Najee all day. So let's talk Sharbs, a TH Fantasy podcast favorite. We all three of us love the physicality he brings to the table, his ability to get tough yards, even though if you talk to the player profiler guys, he doesn't have that dog in him, apparently.
I don't know. I don't think any of them watched any of the UCLA games from last year.
No shit, right?
Fucking dominant.
So he has the ability to get those tough yards that all the metrics seem to indicate Walker doesn't consistently get. In a lot of ways, this looks less like a straight 50-50 split, but more like a 60-40 Walker split with Carroll riding the hot hand when needed. We were just talking about Rashad Penny, right? And his inability to stay healthy. Well, Pete Carroll has tried to get multiple backs over 100 carries over the years, but those second backs have been Rashad Penny, Chris Carson retired because of a neck injury. Robert Turbin injured. Like, Carroll wants to do this, but all of the guys that he's tried to do it with have not been able to do it. So I think that it's obvious that Charbonnet is the best RB2 Seattle's had in his time there. And dude, I don't mind Walker in the fifth. I really don't. But I'd rather have Charbs in the eighth, right?
Sure.
If they're getting the same output, yeah.
Absolutely. And I'll take the guy that's getting 40%. I'll take the AJ Dillon plunge again. I don't give a fuck. Like he's gonna get the goal line work. And I think that if I hate to say it because I never want to bank on injury unless we're talking about a quarterback for Cleveland. Like if Walker goes down, league winner.
That's it. Yeah.
Charbonnet's a much more competent receiver out of the backfield than his physical profile would suggest, but I still think the third down back role is going to be a competition between DJ Dallas and rookie seventh round pick Kenny McIntosh, who McIntosh was specifically brought on to be a pass catcher. I think both will get some looks, play special teams, play third and long, but not relevant. So, gentlemen, Zach Charbonnet is running back 34 right now on 4-for-4. Do you want Zach Charbonnet or Jamal Williams?
Ooh, I'll go Charbs.
Yeah, I think that running back room, as much as I'm a Keandre Miller truther, I think it's, or that's a bad way to phrase it. I'm a Keandre Miller truther, so I think that running back room is going to be a lot more split, so I'm going Charbs.
Charbonnet or James Cook?
Charbonnet.
Easy fucking choice, bro. And I was hyping up James Cook last year as a meme. It's Charbonnet all the way.
So then I'm assuming this one's not going to change your mind. Zach Charbonnet or Samaje Perine?
Definitely Charbs.
Okay.
Yeah, even opportunity is good, but what the fuck has Perine done in the league?
Couldn't get a third and two converted in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
All right, so let's go receivers. Let's go receivers. This is where the money is, baby. So taking JSN at pick 20 is not as out of character as you might believe. This is Pete Carroll, famed 9/11 truther, who pushed to take D. Eskridge at pick 56 when they already had Lockett and Metcalf as established wide receivers. Carroll wants and has wanted, just like Charbonnet as a running back too, he wants that third receiver. And just like Charbonnet, JSN is now the best one he's ever had. So Lockett has pretty consistently ran about half his routes from the slot compared to out wide. And that sort of versatility means you'll have Metcalf on the outside on one side, and you'll have Lockett and JSN on the other. And that's money.
I think so, that's going to translate, into a lot of money, yeah.
So let's start with Metcalf. Now, if you'll recall, before the draft, I had DK Metcalf as a sell. He was wide receiver 17 in PPR last year, but 28th when broken down into fantasy points per game. He's going to get 130 targets. He's going to get 80 to 85 catches, 1,000 yards. And he had a bad year, air quotes, last year, but he had more catches and yards than he did in 2021. He just had touchdown regression. It went from 12 to 6. And I don't know with JSN and Charbonnet in the red zone if he's still going to get those 27 red zone targets that he had last year. Second Probably best not. In the league, by the way.
Yeah.
So this is the rub, man. Seattle used a first and second round pick on skill position players that are specifically red zone threats. JSN's a great route runner. He's got quick separation skills. Zach Charbonnet is a fucking bowling ball. Like, anyone can score in the red zone, which is great in real life, but in fantasy, like,
you just gotta fall in. That's all you gotta do. But guess what? That dude comes at you like a freight truck.
Right. So DK still has poor separation metrics, and since the Seahawks drafted a slot receiver who plays to Geno's short game strengths, like specifically with a ton of separation, I think it limits DK's ceiling more than it limits Lockett's. And by this time next year, I will be so excited to look at what the rush/receiving chart in the red zone is for the Seahawks in 2023, because I think it's going to be so interesting. 4-for-4 has Metcalf at wide receiver 18. I think that's a great price. I think it's a fair price. I think he'll return on value. But his likelihood of breaking into the top like 8 or 9 is just, it's just not going to work. You're sure. Like you were saying earlier, Shane, like you're drafting wide receiver 18 and hoping he's wide receiver 15.
Yeah, that sucks.
Like I don't want to do that. Give me the guy at wide receiver 15 that might be wide receiver 2. That's how you win. So here we go. Here's his ceiling, right? DK Metcalf, top 10 wide receiver finishes. In 2022, he did it twice. In 2021, he did it 4 times. In 2020, he did it 3 times. So never more than 4 times has he been a wide receiver 1 in a week.
Really?
And that's crazy.
Yep.
I think Hunter's right, man. Hunter just said he's just a highlight reel, and that's just why his value's so high.
He's a highlight reel, and he's workout porn for chubby dudes like me. all right, so wide receiver 18 on 4 for 4. So DK Metcalf or Calvin Ridley?
Metcalf.
Yeah, that's tough, man. Calvin Ridley
played for like 2 years.
Yeah, true. I think honestly, Christian Kirk is being supremely undervalued because Ridley's coming in.
I love Kirk. He's gonna have a great year, just like he did last year.
DK Metcalf or Deebo Samuel?
Wow. No, I'm still going DK.
Okay.
Yeah, I think CMC really puts a big old stinker on Debo's upside.
Last but not least,
runs too much.
Last but not least, DK Metcalf or Terry McLaurin?
Ooh. Ooh. I don't know, man. I want to say McLaurin.
You're hoping McLaurin hits his ceiling if you take McLaurin, right?
Right, yeah.
I don't trust Riverboat Ron. I don't trust Sam Howell. I just don't trust that cursed-ass franchise, man. I think it's DK.
Okay. All right, let's move on. As I mentioned earlier, Tyler Lockett plays inside, plays outside. He and JSN will be the elite separators that get open in the short range. So Lockett's demise was predicted by everyone last year, including me. And he went out and outperformed DK in fantasy. He had 3 more touchdowns. Lockett only had 6 less catches than DK.
Damn.
He only had 15 less receiving yards than DK.
Yeah.
That's insanity. He produces, and I mean, like, he's in his 30th year of life. So... I think that this might be like the last year that you can expect wide receiver 2 production before he hits the Adam Thielen wall.
Yeah, I don't think he's in Seattle, if not on any team after this year.
He was top 10 in touchdown rate. Like, how many of his catches went as touchdowns? That's unsustainable. It's going to hurt his overall value, and he was underdrafted last year, but I think course correction means he's going to get overdrafted this year.
I don't know if that's the case, though, because JSN's coming in, right? I think everybody's... I mean, granted, we're all degenerates who, like, pay attention heavily, like, your boomer leagues, and be like, who's this rookie wide receiver? I don't know anything about him.
Sure. So, he had insane efficiency last year. He was producing over expected on per catch, per game, and overall receiving efficiency that if he's going to hit that cliff at some point, right? But then again, Keenan Allen hasn't hit that cliff yet.
Let's go. One more ride.
So who knows? So here we go. He's a dog. He's in a crowded room. I don't feel thrilled if he's my wide receiver 2. If my wide receiver 1 is Cup, AJ Brown, Chase, or Jefferson, I'm fine with Tyler Lockett as my wide receiver 2. But if Devonta Smith is my wide receiver 1 and Tyler Lockett's my wide receiver 2, I'm worried.
You better have a goddamn good running back or quarterback tight end set up.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So Tyler Lockett is wide receiver 22 on 4 for 4. Tyler Lockett or Amari Cooper?
I hate cheering for the Browns, man, but it's Cooper.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
What did Cooper finish last year? Wasn't he like top 15?
Yeah. I think he was between 12 and 18. Yeah. Tyler Lockett or Jerry Jeudy, gentlemen?
Ooh. I don't know. Is Jeudy going to come back?
I'd assume so.
I'll ride the Lockett train.
Okay. I'm going to be hurt for the third year in a row. Jerry Jeudy, let's go. Yeah, one more time. Right. Let's ride Broncos.
All right, I'm going to fuck you guys up on this one. Tyler Lockett or Drake London?
Oh, man. My boy. I'm going London.
I'm biased, I realize, because I've never drafted Tyler Lockett. So it's Drake London. I'm continuing that thing. Come on, Desmond Ridder, king of mid. Let's go.
All right. I am going to, before I do JSN, I'm going to do Seahawks tight ends because it's very quick.
Yeah.
Noah Fant. Noah Fant was tight end 17 last year, and he will do worse this year. Noah Kant is not going to get 63 targets this season. He's not going to get 180 plus snaps in the slot this year. He's in the mid-20s in all metrics, and I don't want to talk Seahawks tight ends anymore.
So, yeah, it's never translated well for any Seahawks tight ends. You always wish, you know, you're always looking at your DFS lineup. You're like, ooh, is Colby Parkinson going to score a touchdown this week?
That's never. Not a real human being.
He's only 4,200.
That's a fake name.
All right, so let's do JSN and get the hell out of here. 46, 39, 34, and 50 are the targets given to the third wide receiver in Seattle over the last four seasons. So I'm trying to figure out realistically how many targets Jackson Smith and Jigba can expect to get. So in that four-year time period, the total number of wide receiver targets are as follows. 2019, 310. 2020, 323. 2021, 298. 2022, 317. So right about that low 300s, targets just to wide receivers. If Lockett and Metcalf keep up their current target rates, it looks like this. Metcalf between 130 and 145. Lockett between 110 and 125. So that's right around 250, 255. So you give 20 targets to D. Eskridge or some scrub wide receiver in week 18. I think that means that somewhere between 50 and 75 targets can go to JSN this year if they stay targeting the same two wide receivers at the same rate. If they start to shift towards JSN, the numbers go up. But even right now, I think we could realistically project about 75 targets for JSN.
Well, and two, like if you said if he was drafted to be a red zone target, if he's only getting 60 targets the whole year and fucking 30 of them there in the red zone, I want that shit.
Yeah.
Yep. I think realistically, like I said, about 75 targets for JSN. But I think if he has like a Jalen Waddle rookie season, they're not going to throw to him less.
Yeah. All this guy's really good in the intermediate. Fuck it.
Right. Let's still keep his target share at like 15%. No, it's not going to happen.
There's going to be games where either Metcalf or Lockett are out, you know.
Yep.
From something.
Four for four has him at wide receiver 46.
Wow, he's free.
I will bet on that talent at that price every day of the week. Geno is going to have his choice when he drops back to pass. He might not get the most targets in 2020 of the 2023 rookie class, but JSN, I believe, will be the most efficient. So with that free price on four for four, Jackson Smith and Jigba or Kadarius Toney? He made two appearances this week. I know. You're not going to say Kadarius Toney. Jackson Smith and Jigba or George Pickens?
I don't know. Everyone's been talking about Pickens lately, and I don't understand it. I don't like his role in Pittsburgh, so I'm going to go
JSN.
I'm going to go JSN.
I don't like the Steelers, so JSN.
JSN or Rashad Bateman?
Oh, that's JSN. A tough one. I go Bateman.
Bateman's going to get so many faded targets now that Odell's there.
Yeah, but he's only going to play four games.
JSN or Jordan Addison?
They're both unproven talent. Ah, God damn it.
Yes, they are. So, I mean, he's going to get good targets, but he's the third option, whereas JSN is also the third option. Is it fourth, Shane?
Oh, no, you're right. Thielen's gone.
That's a toss-up for me. It's too tough to call that one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 50-50. It's just going to depend how... Like, I was agonizing over my Will Levis pick of, like, I don't like it, but I got to pick somebody. So, here it is.
Right. All right. So, that is the 2023 Seattle Seahawks. Ta-da. Too long, didn't read. Geno Smith's going to throw more interceptions. Be careful. I like Charbonnet at price over Kenny Walker. And I'd in order at price point, give me Lockett, JSN, and then DK.
Do the Seahawks win the NFC West?
No.
No? Okay.
Frisco can do it with a ham sandwich.
I think San Francisco, like, I don't think Seattle did enough to fix the glaring hole on their defensive line in the draft. So yeah, it's Seattle. Next week, I'm thinking Green Bay. I'll probably do the Packers. I don't know if you guys have stuff set up, but we'll come at you with two more episodes.
Yeah. Sure.
We're in the thick of it, boys. Any final thoughts? Perfect. Wonderful.
We're all great fried. Way to go.
Yeah, I know. I know. We just info dumped for 2 hours. All right. Have a great night. We love you. Thanks for sticking around. We'll talk to you next week.
Be well. Peace.
Good night. Yeah.